This is Jim Inkster coming today on the show. We'll talk about election 2014. We're now 69 days away from the November 4th primary, and this will be a battleground for Louisiana and for the nation when it comes to the U.S. Senate race between Mary Landrieu, Bill Cassidy, and Rob Manus. Also, as we know, some hot congressional races, including the one in our own backyard with Edwin Edwards, the primary Democrat, facing four well-known Republicans. Also, Bruce Hershenson, one of the most fascinating people in American life, former TV star in California who became a major political mover and shaker and ran for the U.S. Senate in 1992 and lost to Barbara Boxer in a dirty campaign in which he was smeared. He lost a tight race, but he's still commenting primarily about the world being a dangerous place. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, your number outside our area. It's 877-217-5757, inkstershow@wrkf.org. And you may tweet us at Jim Inkster Show. Frank Barnett is producing, and we should hear from Roy Fletcher, the well-known political consultant, in short order. As mentioned, one day short of 10 weeks before the November 4th primary, 69 days and counting before Election Day. And U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu is in the fight of her political life, and she's been in a few brawls along the way, has never won a U.S. Senate race by more than 52% of the vote, winning three times over Lewis Elwood Woody Jenkins in 1996 by 5,788 votes, winning over Susie Terrell in a runoff, which is quite likely to be the scenario this time, a December runoff. That was 2002 when George Bush was the president, and Mary Landrieu eked out a 48% victory over Susie Terrell after winning in the primary with 46, or leading in the primary with 46% of the votes. And then in 2008, she defeated John Neely Kennedy with 52% of the votes and did not need a runoff in 2008. And that was the year that we had discarded the open primary, so there would not have been a runoff. Mary Landrieu could have won that one with less than 50%. But she cannot win this one without 50%. And she is running against Bill Cassidy and Rob Manus. And with us to talk about it is Roy Fletcher. And you don't have a horse in this field, do you?
No, not in the Senate race.
I know you do in the congressional race.
Yeah, but not in the Senate.
But in the Senate race, what do you think?
Obviously, it's close. I think that the fishes are swimming in the way of the Republicans as opposed to the Democrats. I think that's nationally. I don't know if Louisiana will decide the Senate. It may very well be decided before we get here. And right now, if I had to lay a wager, I'd have to lay a wager on a Republican. Mm-hmm.
The Republican most likely would be
Bill Cassidy. Most likely,
Dr. Bill.
Yes, but but I don't think that it would be fair to talk about this race and not talk about Manus's. He's run a heck of a good campaign.
He is, but in our system, he's got to get more votes than Cassidy.
That's correct. Yeah, and it's going to be tough for him.
Yeah, I think it would be.
But clearly he's run a good race. Those votes will all go to Cassidy in the end, or they won't go at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we are.
Well, Barry Irwin has the coup of coups along with Beth Courtney. They're the ones who have the debate with all three candidates.
Yes.
So far, Congressman Cassidy has only agreed to one, and that may be it for him. He may just say, I'm going to go one time in the primary, and then we'll see what happens.
Well, it doesn't. It frankly, smart if he doesn't debate, because I think that Manus has a message that kind of can make it very quick, very simple kind of stuff, and Cassidy's going to be a little more. He's going to get a little more tangled up in his own record, et cetera. And Mary's going to make sure he does.
Well, our next guest is slated to be Bruce Hershenson, who was a television political commentator in California for many years, very popular on KABC radio and television. And he parlayed that into a campaign for the U.S. Senate, in which some viewed him as the favorite in 1992. He was running against Barbara Boxer. It was a very close race, and the last week of the campaign, he was smeared. And he acknowledged he had done this, but it was a legal activity in the state of California, as it is in the state of Louisiana. He had gone to a strip club a few times and enjoyed the pageantry there. And as a result, he was viewed as being immoral, a Republican.
Sounds quaint, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is in California, of all places.
Yes.
And this hurt him badly,
yes.
And he fessed up to it. He said, what's the problem? But in California, a Republican who was not a far-right Republican on moral issues, he loses a race because he went to a strip club, and in Louisiana, we reelect a Republican who consorted with prostitutes. Now, that tells us that I think we have a higher threshold for transgressions in Louisiana than the people of the great state of California do.
Maybe. I mean, if you look at the lifestyles out there, I wouldn't think so. But the fact is, Jim, is that it's kind of incongruent, isn't it? I mean, on the one hand, we have the world, you know, the politics of the country kind of going, well, gee, we're rejecting, particularly the Republican Party, we're rejecting all that kind of rotten. And then on the other hand, that happens, and so it creates a situation of you got to have some cognitive dissonance here in order to survive. I mean, just be honest about it.
Well, you're saying this.
I'm saying.
Riley, as Roy often puts things, but it's serious business.
It is.
And in Louisiana, you can commit a crime of a sexual nature and get reelected to the United States Senate. But in California, a man who committed no crime just went to a seedy place by his own admission, and he paid dearly for it.
I probably paid both ways. The entrance fee wasn't probably cheap either. But the truth is that...
Maybe they comped him.
Yeah, maybe they did. They knew who he was. And maybe that's why they comped. I've heard of that, too. It is kind of a little bit oddball. And, you know, and then you throw in Mac Allister, and, you know, and he does his own porn film, and...
Porn? Are you kidding me? Now, come on.
Yeah, well, I mean,
come on. He was kissing a little.
Well, in the 5th district, that's considered porn, man. I mean,
do you have a candidate in that race?
I had no. I'm
okay,
not. You know,
right.
I'm not. I'm not beating on anybody.
But kissing a lady is not a pornographic.
Except if it's not your wife and you kiss her for more than 22 seconds. But go. Go ahead.
Well,
is that it makes your point again about the incongruent nature of the situation.
And it also shows that you got a great public servant like Barbara Boxer, who I think has been lauded by Democrats and Republicans for her work in the Senate for the last 22 years. She had to win by running a campaign that was beneath her. Quite often people have to do that. Why do people... do whatever it takes to win? Is winning, if you don't win, is it not worth it? Not worth the effort?
I don't know. I mean, you have to ask each individual that. But the truth is that it's a zero-sum game. And you win or lose. It's not like business where you might win, you might lose for a while and then come back and then lose again. I mean, it's a zero-sum game. Mm-hmm. And you lose an election, you don't know what happens to you after that.
You know, that was one of those weird years in California, Roy, where you had two Senate races on the same ballot.
Yeah.
And in the other Senate race, which was an open seat as well, Dianne Feinstein beat Michael Huffington.
Yep.
And Huffington, by the way, just like Hershenson, started as the favorite, and Feinstein ended up winning. She knew that he was living a closeted gay life. She knew it, and she did not use that in her campaign to her credit, and she still won.
Yeah.
Today, let's say some Louisiana politico had a secret life. Would we know about it if they ran?
Let's say this, Jim. If Dianne Feinstein had come down to the last week and her poll numbers had dropped and she was 10 points behind, I guarantee you she would have outed somebody. But that's beside the point. The National Party would have made her do it to control us. Now, you asking me if somebody's private life in Louisiana would be discussed? You bet it would. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be – I don't think there's any doubt about that. Sometimes it's offensive, but sometimes it's necessary, too. I know situations where somebody was kicked out of a judgeship because of the nature of their relationship with their secretary and so on and so on. And now they're running for office again. I mean, pretty odd situation. I didn't ask the
guy
to get in.
But morality is the standard, and this is why.
Well, I didn't ask the guy to get in that situation.
But this is where it gets tricky with Senator Vitter, is that just about every Louisiana politico of note through the last half century has had some sort of
Piccadilly.
Some sort of sexual connection that they probably wouldn't want the public at large to know about. Some would say, look, Vitter just got caught. The others, they've done things, but whether it be marital infidelity or whatever, and it's not talked about. Why are we talking about it with Senator Vitter?
Because, I mean, it had something to do with his public life. I mean, and it had everything to do with the fact that, very much like Vance McAllister, he ran a campaign based upon family values and so on and so forth, and people found that that was not the case. Did it matter? No, they were perfectly satisfied with him representing them. Just as California may have been satisfied with Barbara Boxer representing them. I mean, whatever. That's mm-hmm. the choice of the voter.
Well, a listener, Jordan, and this is a very prudent observation, notes that in 92, when Boxer and Feinstein came from behind to win their Senate races, they were helped enormously by the candidacy for president that year of Bill Clinton.
Mr. Philander.
Mr. Bill Clinton, who brought them both across the finish line, and he also brought Mary Landrieu across the finish line in 1996.
Yes.
She would not have won her race against Woody Jenkins without him.
No, absolutely not. Bill Clinton and video poker.
Well, Bill Clinton has helped many of the
I know people don't like to hear that,
well,
but I'll
say
it again.
I know what you're talking about. That was on the ballot at the same time.
It was huge. It was huge because it allowed a lot of money to be on the street that helped gin turnout in the Democratic base. I mean, nothing wrong with that. That's what it is. I wish the governor hadn't put it on at that time, but he did.
Well, you were for Woody?
I was in the runoff. I handled Woody. Yeah, in the primary, I handled Jimmy Hayes.
You handled Woody. That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Did he ever pay you?
Who's that,
Woody?
Oh, I don't get into my personal business.
Is that? That sounds like a no.
Now, Jim, you know, a fine man like Woody would, you know, wouldn't allow that to happen.
You're smiling though.
and you are going on the new show here.
Well, okay, all right. Let's talk about Woody and you. But Woody did not win another race after that. That pretty much finished him because he came across as a sore loser.
Yeah.
But in New Orleans, there were precincts that voted at 90% or more. And
he had a complaint.
He had a complaint, but it was rejected. And it was a Republican Senate that rejected it.
Yeah.
And Mary Landrieu moved on.
Yeah.
And
you know, and it's interesting that Woody Jenkins, he came so close. And if he had handled that situation right, he may very well be where David Vitter is today. Mm-hmm. I don't mean in the one thing. I'm talking about in being in the United States Senate. And the world changed over a period of time there, in about an eight-year period, and it would have allowed Woody to win a U.S. Senate election. He came close at a time when the notion of you know, the red state, blue state thing wasn't operative at the time, really.
We'll talk about a few more matters with Roy Fletcher. And speaking of former Representative Jenkins. He's intricately involved, as we know, in the St. George movement.
Yeah.
We'll talk with Roy about that when we return in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Roy Fletcher, the well-known political consultant, is in-house. We're talking politics, and and you mentioned how video poker, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That may have cost Woody Jenkins a U.S. Senate seat because it was on this ballot at the same time.
It was on this ballot at the same time. And Woody's wife, I remember near the end of the campaign, Woody's wife went to Shreveport and made a speech against video poker. Now, in Caddo Parish, it passed like 75-25. And they were pretty strongly against it. And I often thought that, you know, that margin there, there was a couple of things that happened, and that was one of them. You can't ever say one thing did it. But that one, I think there was some turnout that occurred and that wouldn't have occurred, and perhaps there was a few swing votes that Woody lost in that deal.
All right. Well, come December, we may have St. George on the ballot at the same time as we have Landrieu and Cassidy.
Yeah, so, good point.
What could that do to that race?
Well, I mean, it's a small area, but you would expect that there would probably be a greater turnout in that area, which would favor the Republican Cassidy, and would help warp that vote some. But it's not a big enough area, I don't know, to make a difference. But in this kind of race, who knows what makes a difference? It could be that close. And 3,000 votes, I believe Landrieu's won an election before by about 3,000-4,000 votes, right?
5,788.
Yeah. So that makes a that makes the point. I'm surprised. Secretary of State Tom Shedler has said that he's expecting turnout in the high 40s. Is that what?
That's for the November 4th election.
Yeah. Well, I mean that makes the point I'm trying to make. I'm surprised by that. I thought it would be higher. I really thought it'd go 55.
Well,
and 25 years ago, this kind of race would have been a good turnout election. I mean, our participation rates are falling in Louisiana
and around the country.
Yeah, and around the country.
What about St. George? Mayor Holden was on the show a few days ago and said he thought it was dead on arrival. Is it still alive?
Well, I mean, it may be alive on the ballot. It may be, but I don't think that they can win the election. I think they'll lose the election.
Why?
Well, I just think that the couple of things. One is that I don't think people are. You're asking people to change something that's pretty dramatic, and. You get into questions of what happens to my taxes and what happens to this and what happens to that and what happens to, oh, my goodness, we're losing this tax base out here and this and thus and such. That's a lot of change for people to deal with. And I think that what people want, it seems to me, is that they want their schools addressed. And it didn't happen in the session, and they feel like they got no other choice.
Well, the congressional races are on the same day as the U.S. Senate race, and we're going to have some contested races.
Good races.
In the sixth district, you have a candidate in Dan Clater.
Correct.
And he is running against three other well-known Republicans, along with the former governor, Edwin Edwards.
Right.
I think will be run first in the primary.
Yeah, I think so. I think Edwards will run first.
So the battle is.
I don't think he'll run first nearly as much as he thinks he'll run first, but he'll run first.
Well, he said he may win in the primary.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, Edwin. I mean, I don't know what
this is.
I don't know what this dope business is around the country. People smoking it and all that. Well, but I want to check.
Well, Edwin Edwards, as we know, he's done other things, but he's never used drugs or alcohol.
I'm joking. I'm playing.
This is payback for Roy Fletcher, who took it on the chin in 1983 to the Cajun
Prince. I'd like to beat him, but it's not the same Edwin Edwards. you know, I mean, he's 86, and you know, but I still want to beat him. Don't miss it.
You know, when I think
I don't wish him bad, but I, you know, but I mean, but clearly, I want to beat him.
He's 87 now.
Well, whatever.
He was 50.
Yeah, he was six, something else in 1983.
56 when you ran against him in 1983.
Man. He was unbelievable.
Yeah, well.
You remember him well, too, huh, Jim?
I do.
I think, the height of his political power in Louisiana, that 83 campaign when he came back. And I mean, he could do nothing wrong or say nothing wrong. And then it ended in an indictment and a trial. Wow.
Well, he was acquitted.
Yes, he was acquitted. But, you know, it just, it was kind of a chink in the armor because he'd never been indicted before, you know. And you could always argue that, oh, that's not true, that he didn't get indicted. Then all of a sudden, okay, got indicted, but he wasn't found guilty. Then what happened the next time? I mean, it was sad.
All right. I see that Clyde Holloway is running for the 11th time for Congress.
Yes.
And by the way, I owe Steve Myers an apology. I said that I thought Clyde Holloway had run as many times as Steve, but he's run more. He's run 11 times. I think Steve's only run 9 races, and Clyde has also run for other offices.
Well, he's run for PSC.
And for governor.
Yeah, for governor.
Remember that?
Yeah, you know.
But 11 times for Congress.
What a record.
At some point.
He won a couple, too.
Oh, yeah, he sure did.
He's PSC member, and he won once for Congress, or maybe twice.
And he could win this time.
I think he can win this time. You want to know the truth? Yeah, I do think he can win this time. That is a race where there is very little money comparative. The incumbent has the problems that he has, Vance McAllister, and Clyde has a base, and I think that Clyde may very well win this, could win this race this time. There are other good candidates in the race. I think this fellow Trace Dasher is really an articulate, bright, and got a beautiful family. He got it all. But, you know, does he have enough money to tell people who he is? Because Clyde's got $200,000 in the bank from the last election.
But the mayor of Monroe is also running.
He's running
a Democrat.
Too. And Jamie has a good record. And, you know, if you want to talk about economic development, that boy's done a lot. I mean, he's done a lot up there as mayor of Monroe.
Well, right now we have five white Republicans and one black Democrat in our U.S. House delegation. When the votes are counted in November or December, when it's all over and done with, is the delegation going to be exactly the same as far as the demographic makeup?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I would think so, yeah. I don't think there's going to be any change. I think two Republicans will get elected to these two seats, and then we'll go from there. Yeah, I do. I will say this, and I've said it before on here, and I've said it a lot of places. I think that in the next 10 years, Louisiana will start to move purple. I really do think that. I think the demographics, I think that the immigration, a lot of different reasons. I think, you know, this reindustrialization of Louisiana is going to cause a reemergence to some extent, not what it was, of organized labor. I mean, there's going to be a lot of stuff happening in Louisiana that will tend it toward more of a purple state. But right now, it's red.
Flaming red.
Red.
Statewide.
Yeah, statewide. I mean, you know, of course, as I've said, you know, Baton Rouge is the Madison, Wisconsin of the South, but that's beside the point.
Here in Baton Rouge, we had a Democratic DA win re-election to a 6-year term, mind you, with no opponents.
Yes.
What does that say?
I think it says the DA is a great guy. I mean, I think he's just done a terrific job.
And you ran a campaign against him?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, we made up.
Well,
I mean, you know, there's nothing to make up about. We ran a campaign. We didn't call him a scumbag. He didn't call us one. We moved on.
I don't think he is a scumbag. He's not a scumbag.
No, he's a good guy. He's really a good guy. Mm-hmm. He's a good DA, and I think he's done a heck of a job for the community, and I think people recognize that. But your point being is that he's a Democrat, but this is a Democratic parish in many ways.
It went for Obama.
Huh?
It went for the president.
I mean, people didn't know that. I mean, when you say that, they go, huh? But it's true.
Yeah, and it went three times for Melvin Kip Holden.
What you have is a center. And then around the center, you have the donut. And that's Livingston and Ascension and some other parishes. And they're not nearly as we would say, blue as East Baton Rouge Parish.
Okay. The line of the day is that Baton Rouge is the Madison, Wisconsin of the South. That coming from political consultant, lawyer, and all-around man about town, Roy Fletcher.
I'm never about town. You know better than that.
who's been doing this for a long time. And next
year, still like it, too, by the way.
Next year, we have a governor's election.
Yeah, and I'm going to talk about it. You want me to talk about
sure.
that?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I think that David Vitter is going to get beat. I really do. And I know that I'm going to be one of the first people to say that, but I think he's going to get beat. And I'll tell you who I think he's going to get beat by. I think he's going to get beat by Scott Angell, who has not said anything about running for governor.
All right,
but I think the pressure is building on that young man to run for governor.
Well, I think you're right, but you've also represented him.
Yes, I have in the past, yes.
Would you represent him this
I
time?
Would. I absolutely and proudly represent
so him. So you do have a horse in this potential.
Well, I don't have one yet, but I'll take one. Now, don't misunderstand me. If they need a jockey, I'll get on it.
So...
But no, I really think that there is pressure. Why do I say that? I think there is a regional pressure building out of Acadiana to have their own governor. And that's a classic theory in Louisiana politics, but I can see it. And it's with money people over there. And I don't mean I don't mean establishment money. I'm talking about people who are making money, that are making money outside of, you know, in the oil patch and, you know, that kind of thing. And those there's a lot of people over there now with money. It reminded me very much of the late 1970s.
Okay, 297-5633, inkstershow@wrkf.org. John Williams says, please have Mr. Fletcher comment on the number of lawsuits filed against Louisiana and those filed by Bobby Jindal for various reasons. Has this governor cost Louisiana taxpayers a fortune abusing his powers with such lawsuits?
No, those people filing those lawsuits at. Look, I mean, any governor's going to get sued. There's been a lot of suits.
This Common Core thing, he seems
to
but
have... this is... Yeah, and I see that somewhere here this morning, he's filing a federal suit over this thing against the Obama administration. Look, I mean, let me be honest. See, we've talked about... This is real good politics for the governor nationally. I don't know what it is for him in Louisiana, but nationally, it's real good politics. And it's good politics in Republican Party primaries. Now, that's what it is, okay? And, I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of people that disagree with that thing, Common Core. Me, I don't even know what it is. I can't disagree with it because I have no clue what it is.
297-5633 is your number. Stephen Dixon says, did Mr. Fletcher just call the mayor of Monroe a boy? Sure, Mr.
No, I call a lot of people, and I caught myself, and I apologize for that.
You've called me boy a time.
Yeah,
or
I have.
Two.
I mean, I mean, that's
you
just
know,
the
Roy,
Southern
Roy, and Roy tends to call people younger than he is boys. So I'll take it, considering that I am younger than Roy.
Well, yeah, you are. And I mean, I call people fellas, and I call people boys, and I call people a lot of different things. I think you're being ultra sensitive, my friend.
Okay. I think we got your point. 297-5633, and we will go to the phone lines, starting with Veronica in Denham Springs for Roy Fletcher. Veronica, good morning. You're on with Roy.
Hi. My question is about Senator Vitter. It doesn't appear that he has any friends. I am a news junkie, and every time I see the Senate, everyone avoids him like the plague. So I don't know who encouraged him to run for governor in the first place. Thanks.
You know, I mean, I don't know personally anything about him, but I mean, well, I mean, I guess we do know something personally, but I don't know anything about his friendships or anything like that. But I mean, there's law seems to me to be a lot of people asking him to show up places. I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. Look, how would you say, the front runner?
He is the front runner.
He's clearly the front runner. Mm-hmm. And when somebody's the front runner, they got a lot of friends.
Well, he's never lost a race.
No.
He's a Rhodes Scholar.
He's a brilliant political mind, I got to tell you.
From Harvard, Tulane, he's a smart man.
He's a really bright man, and he's very, very smart politically. Mm-hmm. I can't argue with the outcomes.
Lynn Sanderson, who you know,
yes,
another political consultant of
yes
note, he says Vitter is two things, Roy. He says he's smart and he's mean. So you better watch what you
say. I know both of those. I know both of them.
297-5633. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Roy Fletcher.
Yeah, do you think that the reason Vitter is running for governor is because he's every bit as ambitious as Jindal? And he realizes that because of the sex scandal, his effectiveness in the Senate is totally compromised. So he's got to try and win this victory as governor as a stepping stone to his own bid for presidency someday.
Well, I don't know if he's thinking about running for president because he said this would be his last race. This would be his last office, I believe is the way he says. But
it's what he says, but...
Well, but in terms of being effective in the Senate, I mean, if they take over, he'll be chairman mm-hmm of the Energy Committee. And I think he'll be effective in the mm-hmm Senate, whether he's, they have some characters in the Senate that have, or in the Congress that have done some weird stuff. So it's not like it completely destroys him.
Well, as Governor Vitter, if he's elected, takes the oath of office, he'll get to choose his successor to himself in the U.S. Senate. And
well, let's take some bets on
that. Well, and interestingly, this is an interesting one. His campaign group is backing Bill Cassidy very strongly.
Yeah.
And Gary writes that would it be possible for Vitter to appoint Cassidy to the U.S. Senate seat if he loses to Landrieu? And, of course, it would be if he wants to do that.
Well, sure. He has all kind of options on that. The question is what benefits David Vitter the most.
Okay, here's Gary Thomas, another Gary, writing, working on my poster to wave at the ESPN cameras on Saturday, BR, the Madison, Wisconsin of the South.
As they say, I love you, man.
but Baton Rouge has trended more blue while the rest of the state has gone red.
Yes.
Think about that. When we had Democratic governors, we had Republican mayors in Baton Rouge, mm, and now that we've got a Republican governor, we've got a Democratic mayor, and Kip has been there for a while.
Yeah, and different demographics, too. I mean, that's says a lot about the story here, but it don't say the whole story. That's the other side. It doesn't say the whole story. We never forget that William Daniel, on the night of the election, endorsed Kip Holden in that fateful night back whenever that was.
That was in the... Well, you're right.
That was the first election he got elected.
First election he won in 2004 when he beat Bobby Simpson.
Yeah, and if you would go look at the precincts that Daniel did well in compared to the precincts that Kip did well in the runoff, you'll find a direct correlation.
Okay, we shall return in 90 seconds with Roy Fletcher and a few surprises as well. 297-5633 back after this 1.5 minute pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Steve in Sorrento. Steve, you're on the air with Roy Fletcher. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, how y'all doing? How you doing, Mr. Fletcher? How you doing, Jim Inkster? Look, I hear y'all talking about David Vitter running for governor. I think the only way that David Vitter would win as governor, Jay Darden, Mitch Landrieu does not run, because I believe either one of them would beat him. Thank you.
What do you think?
I think he's right about Jay in a runoff in particular. I think Jay would beat him. But then again, I don't know about Mitch. I mean, I think we have to wait and see what happens with this. But I think that's probably the strongest Democrat would mm-hmm be Mitch Landrieu.
Mitch, at this point, I think, is waiting to see how his sister does.
Yeah, I think he is, yeah. It makes sense. I would, too. I mean, I do think it would be better for him to run for governor, however, if she wasn't the senator, but that's beside the point.
Well, he's damned if you do and damned if you don't. Yeah, he is hurt either way.
The thing about him is he has an executive record. He's managed things. He's done things. And that sort of takes him out of being just a legislative-type candidate.
All right. Well, thank you, Roy. It's always a delight to talk with
Jim,
you.
Jim, we appreciate you all these years.
Okay. Well, and I'm still here. Stanley Bruce Hershenson is our guest, American political commentator, author, and senior fellow at the Pepperdine University School of Public Policy in beautiful Malibu, where he joins us. Good morning, Dr. Hershenson.
Hi, Jim. How you doing?
Doing well. And we have had you on this show several times, and we know your biographical story. You were a popular political commentator on radio and television in California, and then you got the political bug and ran and almost won a U.S. Senate seat.
That was for the U.S. Senate, and I lost to Barbara Boxer.
Yes, and we know that it was a bitter, contentious race.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't that bad.
You're a magnanimous person. Of course, at 22 years, I think, softens the blow, but it was a close race. It's tough to lose a close one, isn't it?
If you lose by one vote, it doesn't make any difference. You've lost.
I think it's tougher to lose by one vote than it is to lose by 1 million votes.
Well, you just look for that guy, you know, that one guy who could have switched.
But your major focus now, when you're running for the Senate, you were offering some domestic things that were quite interesting and have been replicated. I hear people like Rick Perry calling for the abolition of cabinet positions and agencies in government. But your major focus was foreign policy and still is. Mm-hmm. You've written several books on foreign policy, and your overriding view then and now is that the world is a dangerous place.
Boy, it sure is, and it sure has been more and more dangerous with each succeeding day. I sometimes am hesitant to listen to the radio in the morning when I get up.
What is the most dangerous place right now?
Well, right now, it's obviously a particular party. It's the jihadists. There are certainly other dangerous places as well, but the jihadists certainly take precedence. I'm talking about the radical Islamist jihadists, and in particular, at this particular moment, it would be ISIL, the Islamic State, both Iraq and what they call the Levant.
This American journalist, James Foley, who tragically was beheaded, doing nothing but his job, and beheaded by a thug. What do you think about this? What should the American government do, if anything?
Oh, my God, yes, we should do something. We better do something. We better do something rapidly, because if there's anything we should have learned from the time that President Obama came into office or even ran for office, is that wars are not ended. Anyone who wants to promise that he will end the war is actually saying he's going to lose the war, because wars are always won or lost. There can be intermissions, but they're going to be won or lost. And if we end a war by retreating, by evacuation, by leaving, then all we've done is lose, because the party that stays or that comes into that area is going to win.
Do you fault President Obama for his foreign policy direction?
Oh, of course. Oh, of course I do. Of course. I mean, who else?
Why?
Because he's done what no other president, he has done what no other president in my lifetime has done. He has retreated, announced retreat. He has told the enemy when we were going to leave. Even to this day, he says, no boots on the ground. Well, who the devil are you telling that to? You don't tell an enemy those things. When I was in the service, and I was no officer. I was an enlisted guy. But the first week of basic training, I was told, we were all told in basic training, if you are ever captured by an enemy, you can only tell them three things: your name, your rank, your serial number. Now, since that time, it's also you can tell them the date of birth.
But then to have I'm talking about a private, a guy just in the service, but a commander-in-chief saying we're going to leave Iraq on so-and-so date, we're going to leave Afghanistan on so-and-so date, what kind of information is that to tell an enemy? And what kind of information is it now to say everything's on the table and two sentences later say we're not going to have boots on the ground, that's for sure, and we're not going to be in combat? Why say these things?
Did you have some of the same pointed criticism for the predecessor to President Obama?
No, he didn't say those things.
No, but he made some mistakes.
No, but look, you're doing right now, Jim, you're doing what I have never done with any president who's been president. You don't start blaming. You're using the debating argument of when you're attacked and you can't do anything about it, you then attack them. Well, what for? I'm not going to blame President anything for anything. I continually praised Truman, Kennedy, Johnson. I always have. The only one I didn't praise and gave a rough time to would be Carter and also Ford. And Ford is a member of the same party I am.
Mm-hmm.
But only based on policy? No. I thought that President Bush, I did blame him for a couple of things, not the kinds of things that people do just to turn the argument around. I blamed him at the time that I believed that it was a mistake to say, do go about life as you have before, travel as you have before, shop as you have before, that kind of thing. I'm not really positive he said it in his words, but his administration certainly said it, and it was an error. The idea is after 9/11, when some 3,000 people were killed, you do not live life as you lived before. And being a guy who was alive during World War II, we sure did not do anything as we did before until we had total victory.
Well, the point I was making was that President Bush and Dick Cheney, they screwed up with Iraq.
In your judgment, they screwed up with Iraq. What was the screw up?
Well, were there weapons of mass destruction?
I believe there were, because he had methods. He had weapons of mass destruction that killed Shias, that killed the Kurds in the north, and that killed Iranians. There was no question that there was. Suddenly, he didn't have them. It is my belief that they went to Syria. I may be wrong, but there are a lot of people who are in places of government, and I'm not in them, who have the same exact feeling. Iraq is a very big place. He had a great deal of time to hide whatever he wanted to hide. But let's say he was wrong. If I was president, with or without, and I did say this at the time,
mm-hmm.
with or without weapons of mass destruction, absolutely I would have done that. My God, here's a guy who has rape rooms for women, who throws men off the top of skyscrapers and videotapes them, who tried to be done with Radio Liberty and Radio Free Europe and tried to attack those headquarters, whose President Bush's father underwent an assassination attempt by that government. There is a record of so many things, and of course an invasion of Kuwait that we had to fight in to liberate Kuwait.
We started this, and I think you and I agree that the world is a dangerous place, and some of the atrocities committed by Saddam Hussein were multiplied by the atrocities committed by Fidel Castro, who's 90 miles away from us. Why didn't we go after Castro?
Well, I think that we should have, and I know that President Kennedy certainly attempted to do it. It was called the Bay of Pigs. It didn't work.
We could take him out right now and do so rather easily. Why don't we do that instead of...
Because right now, it has been a long history since the end of the 1950s, and we haven't done it, and it would be silly to just suddenly say we're going to do it now because you say, why don't we? Again, what you do, Jim, and I remember this from a previous time, you then go back, you do the debating technique that I just despise, and I've never used it on anyone, ever. Take the immediate situation. Take the one that exists right now, not one that existed in the end of the 1950s, or why don't you blame President Kennedy? I sure as hell don't.
I know you liked JFK, didn't you?
Very much, even though I voted for President Nixon.
Well, he was vice president then, but I know. But right now,
I'm referring to him as he existed.
Well, and being respectful as you are, I commend you for doing so. But where should the U.S. marshal its forces now? We got a lot of choices, Bruce Hershenson.
We do, but it has to be in Syria and Iraq. It has to be. And I don't want anyone in the federal government, but they do, unfortunately. I don't want them to say what we're not going to do. You say, and when they say, when are we going to get out of there? I think that you say exactly what FDR said and Winston Churchill said, when we have victory. That's our timeline. We're going to win this thing. We have to win, because if we don't win, we're going to lose. And I know very, very well that that can happen. And loss means everything that goes with losing. It means the kinds of atrocities that are going on right now that we've seen within the past week are going to happen right here. And I know that that's true. Because I've seen it in other countries, not to the extent of what ISIL does, but I spent a great deal of time, I think, as you know, in Vietnam, in Cambodia, and Laos. I never believed for one second that there would be a loss of that war. Not one second. But by God, I never thought that I'd see Saigon be called Ho Chi Minh City. It happens, and I saw it happened in Iran. And those are places where you think it can't happen there, but it does.
Do the American people have the stomach for what you're advocating?
They better have the stomach for it, and I don't believe it when people say we're so war-weary. The hell are we war-weary about? We're war-weary if we're in the service, or if we have someone we love who's in the service. But you can't tell me that you wake up every morning thinking, what am I going to do for the war effort? And go to bed at night thinking of that. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the way that we operated when we were at war in World War II. Even if you were a child, as I was, that was life, and that's why we won. And if we're going to say we're war-weary, I'll tell you who's war-weary, the people in Syria, the people in Israel, the people in Iraq. There's a lot of people who are war-weary, the people in Ukraine. Those are war-weary people. We are not, and that's a bunch of hooey when people say we're too war-weary. We better get over the fact that we don't like it, because no one, no sane person, likes war.
You and I have lived long enough that most of our lives, we've lived most of our life. We're not going to double the age we are right now. You're 81 years old. I don't think, Bruce, as resilient as you are, you're going to make it to 162.
Yeah, I am. I'm feeling fine.
Well, what do you see the world being like when you leave? You're advocating an extremely hawkish policy by the U.S. government.
I'm advocating a realistic one, and that we better have some vision, not just live for the day. And that is precisely what we have been doing. I advocate that we take care of situations now, so that the next generation doesn't have to do it.
And if we don't do that, Bruce, what happens?
We lose.
Well, when we say we lose,
don't worry about the federal government or the domestic things you're interested in, because we won't have a president anymore. We'll have a mullah. We'll have an ayatollah. We're not going to have a constitution anymore, because we're going to lose. Now you're going to say, "Oh, you're crazy." Go ahead and say it. I don't care. As I said, I saw it happen in any number of countries, Vietnam, Cambodia, Iran. It did. Am I optimistic about the future? For one reason and one reason alone. President Carter did abandon good friends of the United States. He abandoned Nicaragua. He abandoned El Salvador. Certainly abandoned Iran, traded the Shah for the Ayatollah Khomeini, abandoned Taiwan, and I thought we'd never recover. Also cut so much out of defense. But by God, we did recover. We recovered. Another guy was president, President Reagan, and he turned around those things that President Carter did without ever talking mm-hmm. about him.
Will we have another governor of California, the current one, become president?
I don't think he made the attempt to do it, and it failed. I would tend to doubt that he's going to try again. If he does, he does.
Do you like him?
Yes, personally, I do.
What about otherwise?
I disagree, obviously. Look, the guy's very quite liberal, and I'm quite conservative. So obviously we disagree on many things, but there's a couple of things that we agreed on. We were going to do a debate once, and it ended up that we agreed with each other. It was on a flat rate tax.
Yeah, I remember that. He's backed away from it, though.
I beg your pardon?
He's backed away from it. But
yeah, he did, and I'm sorry he did. But nevertheless, I mean, he felt probably correctly it could never work in California because he could never get the votes in the legislature. Even from generally from his own party, he couldn't get the votes in the legislature. And this state is pretty rough on those people who have those kind of ideas, and he recognizes it. But as a guy, as a person, he's a heck of a nice guy.
As are you.
No, thank you.
Well, Bruce, I enjoy talking with you, and I appreciate the fact that you're willing and able to tell me when you think I'm wrong, but I hope we do it again soon.
I'd like that. Thanks so much, Jim.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.